Hello.
Why do you start it off like that every single time?
I don't know. Maybe it's just a habit. It feels like we're back, and
it's been so long.
It has. It has been so long.
Hello.
Yeah.
We've missed you guys.
What's up, Anissa?
I haven't seen Haley. I'm just kidding, guys. I see Haley all the time.
Yeah, I know. But like, soon she won't see me forever because she's moving.
It's a sad day.
So even though we've kind of been a little bit off on our podcast and everything, it's been so fun doing this. But this is officially like the last time we'll be doing this together because she's moving. I mean, not forever, because I never
we'll
say never.
We'll do it every now and then.
Right, right.
Whenever we visit each other, we'll hit up the podcast randomly. And yeah. It'll be like a little surprise for everyone.
Right. I know. And I think we've always been true to like the fact that we never want this to be like a job. Like it's not something we're like trying to be famous from. It's not something where we genuinely love to do this. And so we never wanted it to be something where if we're already like losing our minds and we're so busy, we just didn't want it to feel like a chore to do. So I'm thankful that we stuck to like kind of why we made the podcast.
Yeah. So I always use it as one of those fun facts that you tell people.
Yes.
In all my interviews, they're like, tell me something about you. Well, I have this true crime podcast, and I always tell people I like true crime, but not in the weird way.
That is so funny, because we're always kind of like, oh my gosh, it's so good. I enjoy it. And we're like, well, that kind of feels weird to say. So wait, that's so funny. Oh my gosh. I always forget, but I need to say that, because I always use like other people's fun facts. I'm like, well, my brother was born in Germany.
Yeah.
I'm like, I never have one, I feel like, but that is definitely
a
fun fact.
Podcast is a fun fact.
Yeah.
We also have a special guest joining us today.
Yes.
And our special guest is...
Rue.
do they even know who Rue is?
I don't know. She's probably made an appearance somewhere and... by breathing hard by us in the in the previous podcast. She's always been around, but it's my dog and I love her dearly, and
she doesn't like for people to hold hands with her.
No, Anissa's been trying to like make me the third wheel this whole time, but she keeps sitting up whenever Anissa tries to hold her hand. She's like,
it's fine.
Yeah, she just breathed hard. She's like, get me out of this situation. But she does love her.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so we're gonna get into
another podcast
from your favorite people. My name is Haley.
We didn't introduce ourselves. My name is Anissa. Nice to see you. You can't see me, but nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Goodbye. Imagine you are a 22-year-old female graduate student walking home from a party late at night and not knowing that your night would take a turn for the worst.
Shoot, I do be a 22-year-old student.
You do.
I graduated, but y'all aren't ready for this podcast, so grab a bottle of wine and get ready for some true crime.
So we're going to be talking about Catherine J. Sepich.
Catherine J. Sepich.
Yes. Sepich? But, yes, okay. Sepich. She goes by Katie.
Katie.
Yep.
Katie girl.
Yes. She was born on December 26th, 1980.
Day after Christmas.
Yeah.
I just realized that.
Yeah. Whoa. Wait, same, actually. That I always wonder, like, with people with the birthdays like that, if they like them or not.
Because you, like, get... Either you get two times the presents,
right,
or you have to combine the presents.
Right.
I feel like the latter is worse.
I know. And then when people have birthdays on holidays, and I'm like, do you feel
celebrated?
Yeah, right. I know. We're finishing each other's sentences. I love it. Because that's all I was going to say. But she was born in Carlsbad, New Mexico, which is where she was going to university in New Mexico as a graduate student. So it was New Mexico State University.
For what degree program?
So she has a bachelor's already, and I don't think she went to this college prior to getting her master's, but she has a bachelor's in business administration, and then she is going to get her MBA, which is what she's doing right now.
Cool.
So to my understanding, she moved back home to be close to her family because they live in New Mexico still. And she's just kind of hanging out there, has friends from home, like that type of thing. So she just moved back home.
Do you know where she got her bachelor's from?
No, I'm not sure. Okay. No. I meant to look that up, but I didn't. Her parents' names are Dave and Jay Ann Sepich. Then she has two siblings. So Katie is the oldest of the three siblings. She has a sister, and her name is Caroline, and a brother named AJ. So would you like to hear a little bit about who Katie is?
I would love to hear about Katie. Yes. Give me all the deets.
Yes, I know. I like to put myself in, like, the shoes of, like, Katie's my friend. Like, okay. I want to know Katie, and so I found, like, random stuff that people close to her were saying. And we'll get more of an idea of who she is throughout this as well.
Okay, cool.
So in an interview, which I also got a lot of my information from various sources on the internet, and some of them weren't, like, consistent on their information, so I just wanted that to be clear that I really, really searched and tried to find consistent information when I put this into the podcast. But I got some information from an interview from a Dateline episode that they did on Katie, and I'm going to be quoting both her mom and her dad. So starting with Jay Ann, who is Katie's mom, she was smiling when she said this quote that I'm about to read, which I thought was really sweet, because she said, quote, Katie has always been challenging. She was very opinionated and very strong-willed about everything, and was incredibly loving.
That's something I feel like my mom would say about me.
Yeah.
Me and Katie already have something in common.
Yeah, wait, that's actually kind of true. I could see that. We're both, me and you, a little bit stubborn too.
We've got our
will in us. Strong-willed, I guess, is what people would say, a nice way of saying stubborn. I don't know. Anyways, I don't think that's a bad thing. I just think sometimes it has, like, that negative connotation to it. But anyways, Dave, Katie's dad, said Katie was full of life, full of fun, and she had lots and lots of friends, which is sweet.
That's nice.
Yes. So also something about Katie is that she was working at a Mexican restaurant in town. You know, gotta make that bank.
Gotta make the bank because she's a college student.
Yeah.
And if you're a college student, you know the struggle is real sometimes.
Yes.
Come on, somebody.
Like, we all go through a little bit of ups and downs with money, okay? I'm not trying to out myself here. But I am a graduate student and I have
post-grad.
A full-time job. Yeah, and you understand that life no matter what. You'll always remember it. Okay. So also, another thing is that Katie had a boyfriend.
She had a boyfriend?
Yeah, she did. And his name was Joe.
Dang.
Yeah.
Me and Katie be having a lot of things in common.
You do. You really do.
Shout out to my ex.
Yeah. Hey, Joe. How you doing? You better be listening to this.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyways, shout out. But her and Joe were dating for 8 months at this time. So while living in grad school, we know we love having roommates. And Katie was living with a friend, and they were renting a house together, and her name is Tracy Waters.
Tracy.
So they were living together, and this was in walking distance to the university, so it was just a great location. They, you know, had this house that they're renting out. It just, things seemed to be going well, like, in all aspects of her life. Like, she was working, she had a boyfriend, she seemed like she has a social life, and things seem to be going well. She's educated, like, we love that.
Yeah.
And it's just, super exciting for her. So, we're going back to 2003, okay?
I was 3 years old.
Oh, man.
How old were you?
I can't do math. Don't ask me that.
How old are you?
I'm 24, but I was born in 1997. Why is that so hard to do? Like, six?
Anyway,
move on. So, this is August 30th, 2003. Katie was working that night, you know, at that Mexican restaurant, getting bank.
Making the queso.
Yes. And she got off work at about 11 p.m. And she planned to go to a party at midnight where she would meet up with Joe, her boyfriend. And some other friends, too. Like, I think her roommate was there.
Was this, like, a fraternity party? Was Joe in a fraternity? Because that's also a red flag.
First,
his name is Joe. And then he...
and then he might be a frat boy. Uh-oh.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. No, I'm not sure about that. I'm hoping in grad school, like, I hope that he's almost her age and that he's, like, doing his thing and being a responsible adult. But we'll see.
We love Joe.
She's
for that,
really going hopefully. For Joe, you guys. Anyways, so Jay Ann, remember her mom, explained that as they understood it, I just wanted to quote that just because we never know. Like, I feel like we never know truly, like, the facts of things. Sure. Because I wasn't there when all this happened and people were drinking, like, you know. But as they understood it, Katie got to the party and found her boyfriend with another girl because he met her there. I mean, she met him there.
He was with another girl when she got there?
Yes.
But, Joe, but let me not looking good for you.
I know. And let me just preface by saying, I don't know what, like, with another girl, like, entails. Like, I don't know what that means. Like, I don't know if he was with another girl in the sense, but obviously, think by being with another person, you don't say that if it's, like, innocent. So, whether they were flirting, whether they were, you know, she's sitting on his lap, whether they were doing something.
If I walk into a party expecting to meet my boyfriend there, and right, he's with any other girl,
right,
like, just the two of them, right, that is suspect,
right?
What?
Right. That's so strange. So as you are experiencing these emotions, that's how Katie felt. Okay. That was a great example because we're really putting ourselves in her shoes. Yeah. So she was enraged with emotion, and Katie quickly left the party, forgetting to grab her purse, which had her keys, her and her phone in it.
So this, like, right as soon as she got there, she saw this and then dipped.
Yeah, dang. Like, because she had met him there, tried finding him, I guess. I picture her, like, walking around the party and being like, right, hey, where's Joe? Hey, everybody, you know, and then yeah, she found him, and then that's when she was like, okay, you're joking, and then she walked home. Mm-hmm. That's how I envision it, and that's from the information that I got. So Tracy Waters, Katie's roommate, stated that the walk home from the party was not far. Like, she was like, if anything, it's like a mile, but probably less. So the police were saying it was 5 to 6 blocks. So not super far. They were aware of the neighborhood that they were in. Like, they were familiar with it. It wasn't like weird. She was like, I would not. She said, quote, it would make sense for her to think she could just walk home. So, like, this is the environment that we're in. Like, you don't think anything's going to happen, which is really sad because that's typically when things happen.
Right.
So, the next morning, August 31st, Katie wasn't at home, which most of the people who went to the party stayed at the party, you know, stay the night. They were all drinking, probably, or if they weren't, they just stayed at the party.
I mean, I'm just thinking back to, like, my sorority days when I would walk back from, right, you know, parties.
Yeah, yeah.
With all my friends. I mean, I never would walk alone.
Right.
Exactly. People are crazy, but you would never think that.
But that's not uncommon when you're on a college, when you're in a college town. Mm-hmm. Yes, I would agree with that. So Tracy got home from the party because I guess she was one of the people who stayed the night. And
this is the next morning.
Yes. And she did not see Katie in her room. And she was like, that's weird. So she called Katie's friends, like, called their, I guess, mutual friends that they have, and was like, hey, have you seen her? Like, she knew that something probably had happened, and so she was just like, maybe she's, like, just somewhere else, weirdly, because she got mad at her boyfriend. Like, I don't know what happened. She called a local hospital to see if maybe Katie got hurt. Like, she was just, like, doing everything. And then the last resort, which no one ever wants to make this phone call, I'm sure, is she called her parents. Yeah. Because she was like, please just be at home with your right. parents. Like, so Katie's parents were trying to see, like, where she could be, what was going on, like, all of those things. Like, they all tried to reach her, and they couldn't. And so Katie's mom was saying that she just knew, like, that instinct of a mother, like, something was not okay. Like, mm-hmm. This is not like her to just disappear and not tell somebody what's up. So the police were called, and then they set out, like, the friends and family set out to find Katie. Like, they were just searching for her. And Katie's dad, Dave, actually drove over to her rented house with her roommate and just to see what was going on.
Okay.
But a few miles away from town, two people, this is where the inconsistent information is given, which it's not the biggest thing in the world, but it was kind of like, okay, what are they doing? But two people, it was like a couple is what it looked like, were hiking or target shooting. So I'm assuming there's some sort of, there's a lot of just, like, land out in New Mexico with not a bunch of stuff. It was more like a desert.
Yeah.
And it was by a landfill. They were either doing target shooting or hiking. I heard both things from many sources. So they were out there, and they saw a woman face down on the desert ground with only a t-shirt on and her pants around her ankles.
So this is a few blocks away from Katie's
It's home? A few miles away, so it's not a long, far trip and drive over, but it's not, like, right there either.
Okay.
So it was a little bit of a drive, but gotcha. That's where her body was found.
Dang.
So the next morning still. The body had also had burns on it where accelerant, this is the police when he was talking in the Dateline thing, he said accelerant, which I had to look up because I do not have a good vocab, but accelerant had been poured in an attempt to burn her body. So I was
what
like,
"What is accelerant? I don't have a good vocab."
So it's a ignitable liquid. So that could be anything. It's like,
so this person was trying to light her on fire.
That's what it looked like.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, allegedly, that's what it looked like. So this could be anything, like diesel fuel, alcohol, gas, like etc. It could be any of those things that are flammable.
Mm-hmm.
So Dave Sepich, remember, he was on his way to go to the house to try to figure out where his daughter was. And when he arrived at Katie's house, there was a policeman there because they had called the police as well. And he went straight up to him. And Dave was like, I knew something happened. And he was asked to go in to identify a body. So, like, I understand, like, okay, there's some time in between finding the body and then the dad getting there and everything. Yeah. But, like, this happened very quickly. Like, this was not like a, ooh, where is she? Can't find her body sort of case. This next day, and they identified that it was, in fact, Katie. And, yeah. And
was
so,
there any, like, struggle, or was like there is any signs of like bruises or
yeah, we'll get to that okay. in a second. Oh, I know because that's where my head goes. I'm like, what stressed. Are the signs of what are the evidence, like what is going on? So I just want to say that I can't even imagine. I'm not a mom, I'm a dog mom, but I'm not a mom, and I can't even imagine finding or going to identify your kid.
Oh no.
And I want to just like kind of like stay in this moment for a second and just explain that, like, Dave told his wife that whenever he went there and looked and identified that that was Katie, he immediately knew it was, and he fell to his knees and asked God to take him too.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That is so sad.
So that's the love of a parent, and that if that doesn't break somebody's heart, like, I don't know what will. So that's what we're working with, okay? At this point in the investigation, it's obviously been very short-lived. The police didn't have really any leads. Like, they just had to scramble and figure out what the heck is going on. They did have some evidence from the crime scene, though. Well, from the landfill where she was dumped. There was skin under Katie's nails, allegedly the killer's, because that would just make sense. Mm-hmm. Like, if they're struggling, like, that's probably going to be the skin from someone who's hurting her, whatever it is. There's tire tracks near the body where it leads right up to where the body was. So it was intentional. There were no, like, right turns, random circles. Like, it was, like, a direct line to the body. And it seemed to be from a small truck. It also seemed that the murder of Katie happened somewhere else, and the landfill was just a place to dump the body. Because there were no, besides, like, the skin under her, besides her body herself with the evidence on it, the tracks were really the only thing. It didn't look like, you know, if it's at a desert, it didn't look like dust was flying up somewhere. And, you know, like, it seemed like that was just where the body was put. So
people were just, like, hiking or
target
shooting in some random landfill.
Yeah,
that's strange.
Or near it, I guess. It kept saying near it, so I'm assuming there it's maybe connected to the same land.
Yeah.
But again, New Mexico, like the land, whenever they showed anything on videos and things like that to give you like the visual, like from the Dateline episode, it was all like just sand, like, you know, like a straight up desert. So like when you put a body down there, it wasn't even hid. Like
it's pretty visible.
Right. And so that's why
probably
I'm like
far away too.
Right. And so that's why I'm like, that's just, but that's so obvious. Like why in a random like desert area where there's no trees, nothing to hide it? When most people, when you think of that, you think of like, I hear a lot of cases where you're putting the body on the side of a road, but there's that ditch with all the trees and the bushes and everything like on the body. Like,
yeah.
So that it's just very weird to me that was like what happened. It seemed frantic in my mind. If I'm the investigator, I feel like it was just like a lat, like in my head I was like, that's weird because that seems like a super quick decision just to throw her there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Anyways, at Katie's house, they were looking for evidence as well because they're like, okay, this looked like it was kind of where she was dumped, let's see what's going on at her house
to see if she even like made it home.
Correct.
In the first place.
Yes.
Or if she left,
right? Because that's the other question, like, did she make it home? Like, what happened? So Katie's shoes were located outside of her bedroom window, and the screen had been removed. So remember, she didn't have her keys with her. So she was probably trying to get into the house through her window because she left her keys, her phone, her wallet, her purse, everything at that party house.
Yeah, so she was trying to get through her window and her shoes were left outside the window?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And there were apparent signs of struggle. The police were unsure, like, what exactly was happening here, and so they just kept investigating and trying to see what the heck was going on. Or did the actual attack happen there? Because they knew that the landfill was a dump site, but they still weren't sure if, like, she was attacked there or if she was taken somewhere else and then put, you know, like, they were trying to figure out what happened and where did it happen. So the police later found out from her parents that Katie actually could not scream. Like, she physically, I don't know what that means. That's
she all. She couldn't scream.
No, like, physically, she's never been able, like, she's talked fine, but she's never been able, like, to have, like, a yell come out of her throat when she's trying
to scream. I've never heard of that before.
No, I haven't either. And I was trying to look up, I'm like, what is that? Is that, like, some sort of, like, condition or some sort of, like, maybe it's just the way her throat is, like, I don't know. Like, I just was like, that's really weird. But interesting, because her parents were like, oh, by the way, she can't scream. So, like, now we're thinking, okay, she's outside of her house. The window to her bedroom is kind of on the side of the house, so it's not, like, right off of the road, but it's not, like, I mean, it's dark out, but it's not, and it's not right in your face, but if you see people moving a lot and you hear things, you're like, you're gonna look over there, or you're gonna wake up, and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But now she can't even scream, and it's dark out, and it's, so they're like, okay, maybe the attack could have happened right here outside of the bedroom window. Okay, so to recap, let's just bring this all together and summarize.
Bring it around.
Yes. So Katie heads home from the party because she sees Joe. Whatever's going on.
Joe. Yes. I can't wait till we talk about you.
Mm-hmm. And she doesn't realize until she gets there. She doesn't have her keys. She out of rage, she just left and she's like, crap, hold up, don't have my stuff. Because, you know, when you're mad and you're like feeling all those emotions or you're sad, you just don't think clearly. And
I'm
so
wondering why she didn't just, like, when she realized, if she didn't live that far away from the party, why she didn't turn around to
that's
get her
what
stuff.
I know, that's kind of what I was thinking, but maybe she was like, okay, the window will be fine. I don't know. So she's trying to get inside of her window because the screen is off of her window. But their shoes, her shoes are laying at the bottom of where her window is with the screen, and there are evident signs of a struggle. There's scratches on her back. This is new information. It's not necessarily a recap, but there's scratches on her back from the stucco of the house. Also something I've learned.
What is a stucco?
Stucco.
You know what stucco means?
Thank you for asking.
Student council.
Yeah, I know. That's what I thought, too. But in New Mexico, the way that they build a lot of their houses, they're cement. And there's a cement type of mixture that they layer onto the finishing part of the house. So when they're done with it, they lay it on. And it's a finishing coat that they put on a lot of their buildings.
Okay.
And so that's similar, I would say, in our terms, that's similar to, like, popcorn ceiling. Like, it's got the little pieces of stuff in it to make it kind of gritty. And so they could tell that it looked like her back had been up against that because of the way that it was being scratched, if that makes sense. Also, Katie couldn't scream, so the attack seemed to be not... It wasn't as weird or bizarre to have the attack happen right outside of her house. And also...
So she lived in a house?
Yes.
So how close was her house to other people's house?
I don't know, but that's why they were like, did the attack happen right here? Because if there's a lot of commotion, like, how did the neighbors not hear? But if there's a lot of commotion, it doesn't necessarily matter, one, because it's really late at night, and two, she can't even make noise.
Yeah, it's true.
So that's where it gets really dicey. But the last thing is that, you know, she had that skin under her fingernails so that they at least could extract some sort of DNA, hopefully, from what was under her nails, which is a lot of times how they do it. So basically, the nails or the skin under her nails were analyzed and uploaded to what is called Combined DNA Index System. So we're going to call it CODIS.
CODIS.
Yes, it's a federal database that is where you put all of the people, like where you put DNA samples, and then that's how people find matches to them. So really quick, I just want to say, it's 2003, okay? So let's just keep that in mind because I think sometimes I forget. I'm like, why can't we do things faster and quicker and blah, 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 and all this technology? It's 2003.
That's so true.
We have to take ourselves back to that. Like, cell phones aren't the same that they used to be. You know, like, even if she had her phone, like, people didn't live with their phone in their pocket for 24/7.
That's
you know
true.
Like it was just to call somebody really quick or whatever. And also in this case, DNA is not nearly as advanced as it was as it is now in 2003. Really quick, I just want to kind of break down, because this is such a big part of the case, I want to break down what DNA does in criminal cases, how it works, like all of that. Okay?
And if you're anything like me, DNA confuses me. So it's okay if you don't understand it at first.
Yes.
I'm with you. So Haley's probably going to have to explain it a couple times.
Totally fine. Ask me questions. Basically, though, I want you to know is like I've kept it pretty simple. So I don't know everything about it and more. I also want to preface by saying I am not a forensic scientist. And I'm also not a DNA profiler. But it is important for others to understand the complexity of DNA profiling because there's a lot to it. And nowadays, we're going to see more and more of this in true crime cases, especially because it can be beneficial. So let's start out with this. We are all made of a unique DNA code. We all have a unique DNA based on who we are and what we're made of. We have DNA in almost every cell of our body. For example, it is in our saliva, our blood, our skin, and our hair. So that's why you can collect samples from people in multiple ways because it's almost in everything. Like, it's basically in our whole body. I just don't want to say 100% because, like, you know, there's always that chance. But DNA sampling, in my opinion, has become more common in crime-related situations because forensic scientists have learned more and more about it through the years. So, like everything else in technology, we're just, like, continuously learning more. So that makes sense that they're going to use it for a benefit of figuring things out, like, for example, murder cases.
Well, yeah, because if your DNA matches the DNA on the person who's dead, ding, 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 gotcha.
Right. Thank you for saying that. You're always, like, really good at this because, like, you lead into my next thing. Let me explain this, okay? Our DNA code is unique to us, and that is why it's very beneficial to have this. But it's not always. It's kind of like body language. It's not always an exact science, even though it is a science, because DNA can be easily transferable. So I want to really quickly just plug a podcast I listened to recently. And
shameless plug.
Yeah, and it's called Suspect. From Campside Media and Wondery. So Suspect is what it's called. And it's a multi-part series of a crime that they did not solve for years. And there was a lot of DNA information explained through this. So I think that's why it was so interesting for me to talk about this in this podcast, because I learned so much in such a short time about how, like, fingerprint DNA is also something, you know, you can get. And those are so easily transferable. Like, I could touch, like, your sleeve or something, and then someone else could put their fingerprints over the top. But then 24 hours later, they needed to get a sample off of your sleeve, and mine was on it, but I wasn't with you. Like, it's that type of thing, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, in the case that I was listening to on the podcast, another example would be it was a Halloween party when the crime happened. Again, I'm not going to disclose anything because it was so good. You guys got to listen. But so they were setting up with, you know, the decorations and all the things. So they had tape.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who was a suspect, they based it off of the tape that was on the girl who had been murdered. But he helped set the party up.
Oh.
So the tape was on the girl who got murdered, but he was the one helping to decorate.
So it wasn't even him?
No.
Oh.
And it made him look horrible just because he was there in the place, but he never even touched her.
Yeah.
Like, but it makes you look like it. So that's where I'm saying, like, it can be kind of difficult because, like, it's so easy to leave your DNA somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
in the sense of fingerprints and probably hair too. So now that we kind of understand, like, how complex it can really be, and it's not an exact science, but we all have unique DNA codes, let's get back to Katie and talk about this. Do you have any questions, by the way?
I think pretty simple. DNA, yes.
Okay,
got
good.
It.
I didn't want to confuse anybody, so I tried keeping it simple.
No.
So even though DNA can be transferred easily from one person to another, that's why it was so beneficial to have actual skin under the nails of Katie, so that you could extract that sample and have like an exact like sample. Like that was the skin. It wasn't a fingerprint, mm-hmm. you know? So that's kind of good. Katie's body was analyzed for other signs of DNA. And this is when I want to say trigger warning, because there is rape and sexual assault in this case. And they don't really go into sadly much detail. Not that I want to know the, I mean, it's, I don't want to know it necessarily, but like they don't really talk much on it besides just that the fact that there was sexual assault and rape, and I'll get to it more later. But you know, they were analyzing her whole body for DNA at this point, and they did detect on where was it? Sorry, I lost it in my notes. She was analyzed for other signs of DNA, and there were some detected on her vagina and anal swabs that they did, mm-hmm. indicating that there had been a sexual component to this crime.
It's
potentially, because also she had a boyfriend. Well, because she also had a boyfriend, so I'm wondering, like, you know, like maybe they were sexually, like they had sex, you know, before she went to work that day. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
So again, that's something where we need to keep that in mind. But allegedly, for now, here's the other complex part of DNA. Not everyone's DNA is in CODIS. So remember when I said CODIS is the federal database that they use for DNA, where they put people's DNA so that they can match it. My DNA is not in there.
How do you get your DNA in
let
there?
Me tell you, Anissa. Let me tell you.
You around, commit a crime?
Around the time of this case, so 2003, many states considered it illegal to take DNA samples from someone unless they were convicted of a crime.
Okay.
And sent to prison.
I mean, that makes sense.
Because it's like you're not born and you're like, give me your DNA. Like,
but like, also would make sense. I don't know. That's an invasion. I don't know. Like, with just stuff like this, it's like, I would understand why, like, at birth, they would be like, give me your fingerprints.
Right.
Don't they take fingerprints of
babies?
Wait,
I think they actually do, maybe.
Yeah.
And, like,
footprints,
I think that's just kind of cute. I always thought that was just cute. Like, I didn't think people did it for a reason. I thought they did it because it was just a little baby foot.
I feel like it's because they put everyone's DNA in a database, like, when stuff like this happens.
Right.
To see if something pops up.
Yeah. No, I know. I tried looking more stuff up about this because I think it's interesting, too, because you can see both sides where it's like, okay, it's beneficial for these reasons, but I sometimes am worried because I'm like, what about people, like, what if I did have my DNA in there and, like, it's kind of similar to something?
What if they,
like,
tried to use my DNA to steal my identity?
Right. Oh, they want this identity. Let me tell you that. Yes. They want this loan, like, the debt that I have and all those things. Okay, you can take it.
You can take it.
Yeah. So, basically, unless somebody with that DNA were to get arrested and sent to prison and convicted of a crime, sorry, just convicted of a crime and sent to prison, they would not be able to find a match. So as we sadly realize that this is the case, they basically waited 3 years. It was a waiting game.
They
never found, for 3 years, they didn't find a match to who the DNA was.
What?
So again, in my mind, I'm thinking 3 years is a stinking long time. But on the other side, there's people who don't even ever have a match.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
They wait way longer and their families are torn and they're never getting that closure and they don't have like that sense of relief that they just have justice, you know? And so yeah. I want to just really quickly also speak to that. Like, I feel like we're learning a lot and I'm also preaching a lot here, but I'm like, it's just, I can't even imagine that. Mm-mm. And so I'm thankful that it was 3 years and not never solved, but like at the same time, that's a stinking long time.
Yeah.
So back to the case, the police took the DNA samples from everyone that they knew at the party that night, because that makes sense.
How did they find everyone at the party?
I don't know. That's why I was like, I put in here, I said almost everyone, because I never know, like everything's not 100%. So I never know. I don't know how big the party was, I don't know, whatever. And that's when they just did their thing where they, you know, they start questioning people, they, you know, ask people questions, they, like, not in terms of interrogation necessarily, but like just getting information. So naturally, people who are closest to the victim are suspects.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Joe. You are, right. Like, I might be a suspect if something happens to you, because we always be hanging.
That's true.
But God forbid anything happens. Oh, goodness.
Missing,
let's not
hanging.
Go down that road. But so naturally, they're going to question those people, you know?
Sure.
And so they found Joe. They're like, hey, Joe, what's up? Like, they're kind of feeling weird about him because of just the evidence that they had. And
they had evidence on him?
No, the evidence that they found with Katie. So, like, they knew from questioning that she stormed out and left because they got into an argument because he was with another girl, blah, 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 blah. and he didn't really mention some things that he should have, like, it was just, like, a bunch of, like...
inconsistencies.
Yes. And so they took samples from everybody at the party except Joe.
They didn't take samples
because he refused.
Oh my goodness.
And he was the only one who refused, which again, you guys, they're going to get it. They're going to get it no matter what. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're going to get it. It just,
how do you refuse that?
I don't know.
I feel like if they ask, you just got
to
do it.
That's what, in my head, I was listening to that and I was reading stuff about it, and I'm like, in my mind, I just say yes, because I didn't think I had an option. Like, no. You always have an option in some cases, but I'm like, when a police officer asks me, it's like now or never. And right. If I'm not guilty, I'm giving you my DNA. And when people aren't guilty and they still don't give your DNA, or they do, it's still like, you know, you still got to figure all that out. But I'm like, just give it, because they're going to have to get it at some point. So, because they have ways to work around that stuff, like... I feel like
you just get a warrant,
right? For your DNA. So Joe is now the only suspect that the police had in mind. Like, that after going through everything, they could not figure out who it could be. Like, they had no leads, and Joe was the only one. So they kept surveillance on him, and then they didn't allow him to even attend Katie's funeral, which was a week later. And while they're at the funeral, while the detectives were at the funeral, they went to the cars of each of the people in attendance, like, in the parking lot, and inspected their car, because remember, they saw the tire marks, mm-hmm. and it linked to, like, a small truck. So that's, they smart. Were going and just, like, looking at everybody's cars, because a lot of times, if you I'm repeating myself because I'm trying to think of the words I want to use. A lot of times in cases when this happens,
The person that did it will go to the funeral because they feel guilty or whatever. They will stay
close to the case. They want to know what's happening in the case. They want to know what they discover.
This is giving me... Have you ever seen Pretty Little Liars?
Yeah.
This is giving me Pretty Little Liars vibes for some reason. I don't know why.
Because it's like that young, like, drama stuff.
Yeah, but you remember, like, A, the person? Like, he would just always... Or he or she, whatever. There's, like, seven of them.
I know.
Would always just be there.
Yeah.
Always there.
And always... Yeah, so it just... It's creepy. It's weird. Mm-hmm. So... That's why they were doing that, is they were looking at the tires.
Yeah.
Also, the detectives found out that one day before Katie was brutally murdered, her and Joe had sex on her bed. This is where the police got Joe's DNA. So, you know, I said they work around things, they figure it out how they're going to do it.
With the DNA they found on Katie and, you know, her JJ was Joe's?
No.
Okay.
So, it turns out, this is where the police got, you know, Joe's DNA from the sheets of her bed, and compared it to the skin found under Katie's nails, because you can just compare all the DNA as one, mm-hmm. and it wasn't a match.
Oh, okay.
Well, so, Joe...
Is he off the hook?
For now.
Okay.
And he is. He's off the hook. Ugh, I can't keep you waiting. He is off the hook. But you always gotta...
It's most of the time, it's always the boyfriend or the girlfriend. Or the significant other. The husband,
really,
the wife.
It really is.
Family member. It's... someone you're closest to the most. I learned that in school.
Right. Well, and that's why I'm like, it sucks for the people who are actually, like, not guilty, and they just love them and they're mourning them, because, like, but when you're not giving your DNA, that's so sus.
Yeah,
like,
why do you make it harder for yourself?
Right, right. So, but there's also those people who just never want to help out anything and find their loved one's killer quicker. So I guess that's where Joe fits. The New Mexico police exhausted all their leads. So they literally, what requires a case to become a cold case is when you have exhausted every single potential option and reason and person. So this case became a cold case.
Oh, dang.
So it's a cold case. That's it.
A cold case.
Nothing, no, we don't find the murderer.
The end.
We don't, except you know that that's not true, because I already told you 3 years later.
Funny thing about Haley is she does not like any cases that are unsolved.
Yeah.
Unless she hates them. So you will never get a case from us that's not
unsolved. I know. Unless it's like absolutely, like, incredibly, like, insane. Because I love that people do that for, like, justice, to still, like, get the word out. People, like, can, you know, there's podcasts. Like, the Suspect podcast was getting people's, like, help to figure out who it could be. Yeah. Like, and so I think that's helpful. But for me, that's where I draw the line, because, like, that's where I start to feel uneasy, because there's no closure.
Yeah.
And that's when it starts to kind of, like, haunt me. Mm-hmm. And I just, oh my gosh, if I get drug into a case, I will live and breathe to, you know, because naturally I want to find the person. Sure. So we'll see. Maybe one day I'll get into it. But for now, no thank you. So 3 years later, a man named Gabriel Avila gets arrested. And this brings...
Gabriel?
Oh, goodness.
I was like, what?
Oh! Yeah, so as you guys already know, I can't say names, and I don't remember names, and I'm just... Names are not my thing.
His name's Gabriel.
Thank you, Anissa. She doesn't even know this case. Anyways, Gabriel Avila brings this case back to life from his arrest. So, Katie's case is back on. Gabriel was convicted of aggravated burglary shortly after, like, six months to a year after Katie was murdered. Avila resisted an arrest, and he refused to return the leased property that he had burglarized or he'd stolen. So he, like, kind of fled. And from my understanding, he, like, left.
He dipped.
And they had to find him, and then they brought him to prison. Okay?
FBI most wanted.
Honestly. Come on, dude. So he was convicted of the crime, which was the aggravated burglary, and that is when his DNA was submitted into the database.
What's the Coolio?
CODIS. Coolio.
Coolio.
Okay. Okay, so let's just say, so after 3 years, there was finally a match to the DNA, and it was Gabriel Avila's.
Nice.
Thank you. While in prison, Gabriel was interrogated, and he said that he was adamant about, you know, classic. He did not kill or rape Katie. But the police are very smart people because they brought a diamond ring into the room.
What does now a diamond like, ring have to
like,
do with this?
You're like, okay, where's the significance, Haley? Tell me. Okay, well, this ring was Katie's.
What did she ever... Was she engaged to Joe?
I don't know. I don't know if it's just a... I was thinking the same thing, but, you know, girls can be wearing diamond rings and not be engaged.
I'm just saying. If she was engaged to this Joe? Man... If she was engaged to this man and this man was talking to another girl, but that's a whole other thing. But.
Yeah, no, I still... I want to look up him a little bit. Where is Joe now?
Right.
Okay, so they brought in this... They're like, cool, cool, cool. You say you're not guilty, that's totally fine. Why was this ring in your truck?
It was in his
they
truck.
They found... Katie's ring that belonged to Katie, her diamond ring, 3 years later in his truck.
Dude. You know what,
and
what
in
my
his truck.
What my his truck. But you know my assumption right now is that he did this to steal this ring or to just he was probably going to like rob her house or something
right,
like that.
Right, because he's already like I was saying the same thing because I'm like he's now charged and in prison currently for like
burglary
for
stealing so I think that's what he was originally trying to do and Katie like was there
all right that's a good theory that is a good theory I will keep telling you what happened so and then after he saw that ring he was like basically I mean he's an idiot but at least he fessed up enough because he was like he confessed to raping and killing 22-year-old Katie Sepich.
Dang.
So, I'm going to go back to that night / morning of August 30th and 31st and explain what Gabriel accounts, like what he says happened.
Okay.
Because again, I wasn't there, you weren't there, you know, his mom wasn't there, but he was. Mm-hmm. So, we kind of have to hear what he says. So, he was driving around on the night of August 30th and into the 31st, so it was really late, and he was looking to get drugs. Specifically cocaine. So he seemed to have kind of a drug pattern as well. Gabriel almost hit Katie with his truck, so he got out and asked if she needed any assistance. And I'm assuming when I'm thinking about the situation, she's probably still like distraught. You know, like if it's not that far of a walk, she's probably freaking mad.
Yeah.
Like, and she's walking home, she might be crying.
Right.
She might, you know, be drunk. I don't know if she was there long enough to have a few drinks. Like, who knows? And so she probably looked kind of like disoriented.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, that's probably what I would be looking like. And so he would ask if she needed assistance. And that's why I was like, why would he ask that? That's kind of weird.
Thing is, you could say all this stuff about his account. I don't believe a word he says.
That's where I kind of have... I almost didn't even put this in because I was like, I don't care, Gabriel. I don't care about you and your thoughts. But at the same time, it's interesting to hear. So, Katie said no, she didn't need assistance, and that she just lived a few blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
Never tell somebody that, and first of all, okay, if that happened. Allegedly. Gabriel proceeded to get into his truck, and then he drove away, where he later had to pee, so he pulled off on the side of the road and said that he urinated on the side of the road.
Thanks for that information, Gabriel.
Thank you, we needed to know. But then, so he's really just, like, driving around, okay? It's like one of those late-night drives, except he's staying in these, like...
driving around, looking to see who on the side of the street can give him drugs?
Right. So what? He's kind of just, like just going down roads. Like, I'm picturing him just going down the same ones, just keep... You know, he's staying in a certain area. He's not going far. He sees Katie again, walking. So he follows her, naturally, because that's your first instinct, is to follow somebody when it's late and you're being creepy. And you're a male. Oops. I said it. So, when he sees Katie again, he starts to follow her, and he ends up asking her again whenever he sees her get to her house. He is like, hey, do you need help?
Why can't he leave her alone?
Exactly.
Anyway, I don't believe anything he's saying.
Well, then she said, she explained to him that she didn't have her keys and she was trying to get inside through her window. So she walks over to her window, and that's when everything happens. And Gabriel says, quote, he suddenly lost it.
He lost it?
Yes. He grabbed Katie from behind, threw her to the ground outside of her house. He proceeded to pull down her pants and raped her anally and vaginally. He then strangled Katie to death. Katie's autopsy, by the way, did show that it was death by strangulation. So she did, what, to answer your question earlier, she had bruises all over her, scrapes, scratches. Like, she was a fighter. Like, let me tell you that.
Good for you,
like,
Katie.
Like, she, with the... with skin under your nails like that, like, you have to be fighting back.
Yeah.
So I stand by strong women. But and the reason he says that he strangled her to death is to death, like, not just strangled her to death, is because he knew that if she lived, she would be able to identify him.
Yeah.
Right. Good job.
What do you mean?
Very good.
You're not going to go to jail?
We love common sense. When people know that when you do a horrible thing and you get a consequence?
That's crazy.
Are you joking?
That's a crazy concept.
You get in trouble for things that you do?
That's awesome.
So that's what he said, okay? And that is when now he's left with his body. So he drove to the landfill. He tried to burn the body. Okay, hold on. I'm getting mad, okay? I'm getting mad as I read this because I'm thinking, one, you did not need to do any of this. No one ever needs to kill somebody, ever.
No, no, no.
Second, you didn't know her. You didn't even know her. She is a stranger. This is uncommon for people to get killed by people that are strangers.
Yeah.
You had every option to not even interact with her.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, you almost hit her with your car. Was she walking on the road, I guess? Like, I don't know. But say that's the case, okay, you did what you could. You said, sorry, like, you need assistance, and then drove away. Great.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you don't do anything else.
This is why I don't believe anything that he's, like, saying or any of his accounts are true, because I feel like there's just some, like, preconceived notions or, like, in his past, just some other instances where he's had similar circumstances or he's done this to another person. Like, this is, like, I feel like it's just, like, not a one-off for people. Like, people just don't decide to randomly do things
and then suddenly
to strangers.
Lose it,
like, to just randomly strangers. Like, there's something mental or something, like, in his past that he's done it before or has caused an urge to do this. And,
like, his history had to have influenced something, is what you're saying? Okay, I would agree. And also just the fact that, like, when you're retelling, like, this is the only account of what happened, and because it's from him who was there, he was the only one. It's not like other people were witnesses.
Right.
And so that's where it becomes hard, too, because we all know that we're biased to ourselves. So when you're telling a story, you're like, oh, and I pulled over and I said, do you need help? I don't know if she needed help. He might have just gone up to her when she was walking to her house, followed her, and didn't ask her anything and just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, showed up again. You know, like, who's to say he said... he was this nice person. What, you know, this stuff all maybe even did happen, but the way it happened and the what he said was most likely not true.
No, I don't believe him.
Yeah. So that's when he drove to the landfill, dumped her body, and then he tried to burn her body with alcohol that he had in his truck. So that's where the burns came from. Idiot. Anyways, Gabriel Avila had never met Katie prior to this. I just wanted to say that one more time. Now we're going to the sentencing. So we know what happened. We know that he was interrogated and that he did plead guilty to both raping and killing her. So he pled guilty to the first degree murder, the first degree kidnapping and rape.
It was first degree?
Mm-hmm. Of Katie.
And so he planned it?
I'm assuming that's how they went about it, because he did, whenever he said, because I was thinking about that too, I'm like, it baffles me what makes it, like, planned and not planned, because you can never truly, it's so ambiguous.
Because I'm like, if it was a stranger, how is it first degree?
But give him first degree. He did say, remember in his account, he kind of, I mean, part of it, I do feel like there's some truth to what everybody says, you know, but he knew that she'd be able to identify him, remember? So to me, that's planned then, that you're like, oh crap, she can identify me as a actual rapist and sick, horrible human, mm-hmm. so I'm gonna kill her.
Okay.
That seems to me like some reason. That's fair. Would you agree or no? Yeah. Okay. So, and basically he was given a life sentence, which is a minimum of 30 years, which I think life sentence should be 100 years, but that's me, plus 39 years that the judge added on for additional, for that additional charge of sexual assault and rape of Katie. Gabriel expressed that he wanted to talk with Katie's parents. I don't know if this was in court or after. I love watching the court trials go on, but I couldn't find anything. But I wanted to see it. So I don't know if this was like before or after, like what happened. He wanted to explain himself. So even though Katie's parents, God bless them, will never have Katie back, they agreed to hear him out.
That's crazy.
I would not. I would never. No. I would never. Gabriel explained that the drugs, I mean, I think he probably said more, but basically he explained that the drugs were what influenced him and led to him murdering Katie. Like, that his all of a sudden losing it, he was saying it was drugs and what was going on. So, that is the case.
That's crazy.
That is absolutely insane. It is horrible.
What
it
was
is sickening.
Her parents' reaction to him saying that?
I don't know. The mom was the one who was talking about this, that he wanted to talk to her and stuff. And I don't know, like, if it's because it's been so many years, but she didn't seem like mad or like, but she was just like, he did want to talk to, like, she was very matter of fact.
I guess
so.
3 years had passed and a lot of like healing and time.
Well, and then
passed.
When this documentary was, or the Dateline thing was done, I don't know how many years that had been. True. So maybe she had, I don't know, but basically I would not have wanted to listen and hear him out.
Absolutely not.
No. So, but something cool, and I always try to find, not the silver lining, because I don't always think that that's appropriate, but, like, the good that comes out of it, in a sense. Like, you never want this to happen, I don't care about the good, because I want Katie to be alive, sort of thing. But something that came out of it was that Katie's parents were adamant and determined and driven to seek justice when it came to DNA, and how it was taken and what was done. So remember how I mentioned that around the year of 2003, many states, like, they took samples of DNA, but only when someone was convicted and sent to prison?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this did not sit well with them, because they were like, we waited 3 years, God forbid the other families who never find out, or who wait so much longer just for DNA to be put into CODIS. This is when they developed Katie's Law, which requires a DNA sample to be taken from anyone who is arrested for a violent crime. So, remember, Gabriel, he was arrested, like, 6 months to a year after Katie mm-hmm. was murdered. But all that, you know, it takes a long time to then go to whatever, but he was arrested for that. And then, because he didn't want to go to prison, and because he was, like, not returning possessions, he was then arrested and, like, convicted of aggravated burglary.
Okay.
So it was like he was arrested for a long time before he went to prison.
Mm-hmm.
So if they had found out when all that happened, they would have known way sooner and would have been able to grieve and process and have closure way sooner than when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I stand by that. I think Let's that's go. Awesome. And basically they came up with this, and it's the... So it's Katie's Law, and instead of waiting so long, that was the point, was that they want families to know and get this process done sooner. So because of their determination to seek justice for others, Katie's Law was signed into law in New Mexico along with 28 other states.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's
so
good.
They adapted, if not the exact Katie's Law, they adapted parts of it that made that a thing where when you get arrested, you get your DNA put into the system, because to me that to me makes more sense than,
for sure,
you know, just asking someone randomly on the street, hey, give me your DNA, you know, like, mm-hmm. I feel like that's the way we can regulate how people are putting their DNA. The problem is that still people have a clean record and they do horrible things one time,
yeah,
which I don't think, I don't know, sometimes we don't, but for the, I'm thinking out loud again, sorry, I have so many thoughts, but I'm also thinking about the serial killers. If they would have caught one, they would have caught the other before they killed other, like, other women, or they could have linked them into a serial killer and not, whatever. So there was one little glimmer of hope, and that was Katie's Law, and I'm very thankful for that family that they, you know, are very strong-willed and chose. I think the reason that Katie's like how she is because of you guys. Because you, guys. As parents, are strong-willed as well.
Yes.
So that's the case of Katie Sepich. Really sad, really hits close to home because I'm a grad student. You're 22. We're out here, like, feeling that.
For sure.
So just be safe out there.
Be safe out there. If you're a young woman in a college town, just be safe. Don't walk alone by yourself.
Yeah. No matter how mad your boyfriend makes you because he's an idiot and he's a dummy. Idiot.
And his name starts with a J.
Yeah. So he's already doomed. And just be safe out there. We will probably be talking to you guys at some point in the future.
We will miss you guys for now, though. But this is not goodbye. Great. It's a see you later.
Yes. Yes. Preach it, Anissa. But anyways, you can always continue to follow us on Bottle of Crime on our Instagram, and just share the podcast to whoever you want. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
we love
guys.
You. Bye.